Thank you for subscribing to InvestTalk. We'll begin in just a moment. KPP Financial Senior Vice President Justin Klein explains why a registered investment advisor firm wants to talk about real estate.
Your home is an important piece of your total financial picture. You need to make sure that when you do retire, you have a plan to maybe relocate, downsize if need be.
Contact Justin directly with a note on investtalk.com. Just select Contact Justin or call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts. Now, InvestTalk. You're listening to an encore presentation of InvestTalk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next InvestTalk.
Well, good night, good evening, everybody. How are you doing? This is Steve Peasley. You're listening to InvestTalk, and I really appreciate you being with me. Whether you're a beginner investor or experienced, doesn't matter. Thank you very much for listening. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. I hope you feel that you're part of the discussion, so give me a call.
Hey, Steve. This is Arun from Philadelphia. I listen to your show all the time, or pretty much every day. I had a question on the 401k stuff. I used to work for a company. I don't work for that company anymore. I had about $10,000 in my, I'm 31 years old. So I moved, I rolled over the money from 401k of the previous company to a Vanguard IRA account. After listening to the show, I thought it's better to invest in Roth for Roth IRA. So I was wondering, can I move that money over from 401k account to regular IRA? Can I move the money from regular IRA to Roth IRA? And how do I set it up? I mean, I have an account with Vanguard, Fidelity, and Schwab. Any specific investment brokerage companies you recommend? Thank you. Bye-bye.
The short answer is yes. You can open, and how you would do it, you just open up a Roth IRA, and you roll the regular IRA into the Roth. But just be aware, and you could do it anywhere, Vanguard, anywhere, you know, E-Trade, any place you want to. Just be aware when you do that, whatever you roll over from the regular IRA to the Roth IRA, that money that you roll over to the Roth, it's going to be added to your adjusted gross income for the year that you do it. If you do it this year, it's going to be for 2015. Do it next year, 2016, it'll be added to your income in 2016. And of course, I wouldn't do it till at least next year. I mean, that's only, you know, next week. But that's the only big drawdown. But again, then the growth of the Roth IRA, all that growth, you'll never have to pay taxes on it again. That's the big benefit. So it really is a personal thing. If you're older, over 55 or so, I tend not to recommend Roths because you don't have the time to build, you know, really good increases. If you're in your 40s or younger, I like the Roths better. Doesn't mean I don't like them. It's just it's a personal choice of how you want to manage your tax consequences. You know, in retirement, before retirement, it's that kind of thing. You know, if you have a lot of, if you got laid off and you didn't make much money this year, that'd be a good time to roll the regular IRA into the Roth because your tax rate will be low. You know, so there's, you know, again, it's a real personal thing you got to think about. But yeah, the answer is yes, you can do it. And it doesn't really matter where you do it. You can open up the Roth. So the process is open the Roth first and then roll from regular to Roth IRA. And it'd probably be pretty simple to wherever the IRA is now, open up the Roth IRA there. They'll help you. They'll help you do that. Responsible investing is becoming more appealing, responsible investing to investors. More appealing to investors because it makes good business sense. You know, we're talking about, you know, sustainable. You're talking about environmental friendly kinds of investing, making sense of sustainable investing. That's going to be our main talking point today. It's interesting because the arguments are so different than they were 10 years ago. 10 years ago, you were told, corporations were told, you need to do this because it's good for the economy and you have to, you know, be a good economic citizen for. They don't use that argument anymore. Interesting. We'll talk about that. I think it was pretty interesting. I have a possible theory. How about You know, will Treasury yields fall in 2016? Remember, the Fed's raising interest rates. Raising interest rates, so your yields should go up. Treasury yields should go up. But what if they don't? And why are the arguments that they may not go up? I think that might be something we need to explore, and we're going to explore it. Home prices rise at fastest annual rate since August 2014. The S&P Case-Shiller report came out today about homes and where prices are rising. And I think we should talk about that because everybody likes to talk about real estate. And I want to talk about Chipotle's disastrous 2015. Chipotle. By the way, I really love their food. But I'm going to use them as an example of as something to be aware of as an investor. How to protect yourself from things like this Chipotle disaster for 2015. Could you have foreseen the E. coli thing that they've been dealing with? No. But could you have foreseen that the stock might go down? Yes. And how would you have done that? And I'm going to go over that. And it really is a good lesson on watching other high-flying stocks. You know, because I get a lot of calls of people, I want to buy the Amazon. I want to buy Netflix. I want to buy Google because they're so high and they've been going up forever. Well, I'm not saying you don't. You don't invest in them. I'm not saying that. But I need you to recognize the dangers and how the risks go ratcheting up and up and up as the stock price goes up and up and up faster than the earnings. If the stock price goes up a lot faster than the earnings are going up, you got a problem building. I don't know when that problem will come back or how it will fall or, you know, something's going to happen. And Chipotle is a good example of the kinds of things you can watch for. That's going to be our talking point today. And I also have an email question from a listener. He wants to talk about GAAP earnings, general accounting principles. I will talk about that. How long has it been since you've rebalanced your retirement portfolios? And one of the services I provide to a limited number of listeners is a free retirement review. And it's nothing special because all money managers will do that. All of them. But I will do it too. Just go to investtalk.com and click on schedule a meeting.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-99-CHART is our number, everybody. You can reach us. We have lines open, 888-992-4278. And Dennis is calling from Texas. How you doing, Dennis?
I'm doing great. I just have a real quick question I'd like to ask. And Happy New Year, by the way.
Thank you.
Can you explain the monthly investment plan, and do you think that's great for income? And do your firm do fee consultant service? Okay. And my last question, I have three. Do you recommend ETFs over
mutual funds
balance over a balanced portfolio?
Okay. Well, you can use, first to answer your last question, you can use ETF to produce a balanced portfolio. So it's not either or. ETFs can be used to balance a portfolio. And we do that. We don't do a consultant for a fee. Consultant, we don't consult for a fee. We do consultant for free. If you want to talk about something and you just want to get some information, you can call me up. Where are you from? You from Texas?
Yes.
Okay. Well, actually, I'm in California, so we'll have to do a telephone consultation, which I do all the time. So don't worry about that. And what was that first question of yours?
The monthly income plan. I think it has something to do with NASDAQ. I'm not for sure.
Well, it sounds like you're talking about a dollar cost averaging investment plan in which you put a certain amount into index funds or other funds at every paycheck or once a month. And that is a good way to get invested over a period of time. And okay. I kind of like it. Yes, I do.
Okay, so if I wanted to talk to you more off the air.
Yes. You just call. Let me give you a direct number, okay?
Okay, great.
And it's an 800 number, so it's free.
Okay.
800-557-5461. That number rings right at my office. You can also call the same radio number and leave your message, and I'll get back to you. But call me directly, 800-557-5461. And the best time to reach me is in the morning, because that's, you know, I'm an early morning guy, because that's when the market is on the West Coast. That's when the market opens.
Gotcha. All right. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Appreciate the call. Thank you. Jason, San Diego. How you doing, Jason?
Good. I recently changed jobs, and I rolled my 401k over into a IRA, and it's got about $14,000 in it, and that's about all the investments that I have. Now I'm wondering, what do I do with it? It's not really enough money that I feel like I should invest in individual stocks. Do I buy a mutual fund or a couple mutual funds, or what do I do with about $14,000?
You buy several mutual funds, not one, not two. Maybe at $14,000, I would probably buy maybe four.
Okay.
Okay? If you're in a 401k, you may not have very many choices, though.
Well, I rolled it over into an IRA now that I changed jobs.
Okay.
Well, that's why I'm wondering, what do I do? I only had limited choices before.
Right, okay.
And now it's wide open.
Okay. I would roll it over into either Fidelity Investments, you know, with all the Fidelity mutual funds. They have a program, a no-load, no-transaction-fee program over there where you can buy any no-load mutual fund, not just Fidelity, all of them. And so does Schwab. They have what's called a Schwab One program that does the same thing. I'm not pushing one company over another. I don't have an axe to grind either way.
Sure.
But they have programs that you can buy a number of mutual funds, no load and no transaction fee. The problem they have, though, is there's usually a holding period, which I don't like. 90 days, you can't sell it within 90 days of your purchase. But you're probably not going to sell it that soon. But, you know, for me, I don't like the restrictions. But for you, it'll probably be fine. Then once you do that, you want to pick some good funds, some very good funds. Where's the custodian now, Jason?
Scottrade now.
Okay, Scottrade is not a bad place to be. You can buy mutual funds in Scottrade. Even if you buy no-load funds, they might charge you a trading fee. It's called a transaction fee. Find out what that is, okay? And my guess will be between $20 and $30.
Okay.
You can do it from Scottrade. Just find no load, no transaction fee funds.
They've got a list of hundreds of funds that are like that, that say that they're in their program with no commission or fee or
anything. Perfect. They don't have a transaction fee?
Well, they've got a list of funds that don't, and it's a pretty respectable list.
Then you're going to pick from that list, Jason, because I'll guarantee you there's at least four of them over there that are pretty good quality funds. Look for a good mid-cap and maybe small cap growth and value. And also, one of your four picks should be a international fund.
Okay.
Maybe 20% in the international.
Because I had debated over whether to have four funds like you just mentioned, or just get one total market or S&P 500 or some.
I understand that. And one of your funds could be an index fund. That's not a problem. If you're sticking with the market for long-term, index funds are fine. I would suggest, though, that you can probably do a little bit better if you find a good manager of the mutual funds. So go to Morningstar.com and check out the funds. See what their ratings are. See how they're done against their peer group. Are they always in the top tier of their peer group? If they are, that's the fund you want.
When you look at the Morningstar and they have 4- and 5-star funds, some folks have told me that 5-star fund is maybe all played out and that you might want to look for a good 4-star fund. Is that correct or no?
I'm right in line with those folks, whoever told you that. I like 3- and 4-star funds. The underachievers that are trying to be overachievers as opposed to the overachievers that have already achieved. I have found in my studies that 5-star funds generally underperform going forward.
Should I be worried about the size of the fund at all or not?
Yes. Well, you're asking some good questions. I like not to have more than a couple of billion dollars. I like to have a few hundred million dollars under management. I don't like the big ones. Why? Because they become the whole market and you might as well buy an index fund.
Yeah.
So stay away from the big guys.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Jason. Appreciate the call. Very good question. See, now that's a perfect question for everybody else to listen to. It's a really good question. You're listening to Invest Talk, everybody. I'm Steve Peasley. We want to answer your questions. Our listener line number is always ready for you. 888-99-CHART. Beginning our experience, we're here to answer your questions.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-992-4278 is my number. Give me a call. Love to talk to you. Let's talk about sustainable investing. What is sustainable investing? Well, it's kind of a metamorphosis from social responsible investing to now what we call sustainable investing. And it's changed. Now, there still are people that insist on just being socially responsible investors. That's all in it. They won't buy any stocks that, you know, no tobacco stocks, no stocks that make weapons, no stocks that have any hint of environmental impact, that kind of thing, oil companies. Well, now we have to look, it's kind of moved from that to this. Have you ever noticed the argument used to be, especially in social responsible investing, that argument that people make is, you, Mr. Company, have to do X, Y, Z. You got to stop pumping oil out of the ground. You got to stop polluting the air. You got to stop. Whenever anybody takes that position, they're more interested in being right. They want you to acknowledge that they are right, and they have, that's a direct conflict with the other party who immediately gets defensive. Well, social sustainable investing is saying, look, maybe what you're really after is you want sustainability of your products. And that sustainability does not conflict with being a little bit socially responsible. And let me show you why. We want to be on your side. We don't want to be a confrontation. We want to be a part of the team to make it better. Like, let's take an example. Environmental impact on farming, using chemicals and abusing the land with overplanting, or even growing herds of cows. How to keep the land and herds healthy over longer periods of time as opposed to just a short-term benefit. Maybe moving toward, you know, even if you're in the oil industry, is there ways to make it cleaner, less impactful on what you do? See, stuff like that. And I think that is actually a pretty darn good idea. You want, what's the goal? I always ask my clients, my family, when there's conflict, what is your goal? Is your goal to be right, or is your goal to resolve the issues? If your goal is to be right and you just want to stand your ground, then just understand that's your goal, and you'll probably not get any kind of agreement from the other party. If your goal is to have some kind of harmony, then what you do is you find common ground and you expand on the common ground. And that's what this sustainable investing idea is all about. And I like it. I really do. I hate being told by somebody, well, you shouldn't be investing in XYZ company because, you know, they make movies that are violent. Well, why don't we talk to them about making movies that make money? And maybe we can move them away from the movies that you don't like. Okay. See, that to me is much more sensible. You're going to get a lot more CEOs listening to you and taking you seriously if you approach it that way. And isn't that your goal? Achieve the goal. Don't achieve the good feelings of you being right. Achieve the good feelings of you having, you know, attaining a goal and moving toward what you want. Anyways, I don't want to get preachy about it, but it just seems to make sense, and I like the idea. I do. We're here for you, beginner experience investor, 888-99-CHART. If you're a podcast listener and you can't reach us during our live program, 4 to 5 Pacific time, Monday through Friday, you still can call 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is John. I was calling from Walnut Creek. I just had a general question. in the U.S., if I want to see how the market did, I can look up the Dow or the S&P 500 or the NASDAQ. If I want to see how the Chinese stock market did for the day or the Hong Kong or the, blanking on the third one, you know, I'll think about it in a sec. Would you use the Shanghai Composite, the Hang Seng? I can't think of the third one right now. Or are there any other indexes that you use to better track to see how the market did in Asia? Oh, the Nikkei was the other one. I'm sorry. I'm interested in just having something to look at to see how the markets in China, Japan, and Hong Kong did in the day. So thank you very much. I enjoy your show. Bye-bye.
Those are very good indexes. Japan, China, the Hang Seng, and the DK. You know, those are very good indexes. If you want to look at emerging markets in general, you know, instead of as country specific, I like to use the exchange traded fund as a proxy. All the different exchange traded funds, and you can look at them. Look at a yearly chart, and you can see in a really quick view of what they've done over the year. So, but yeah, those are very good proxies for those markets. What about Australia? What about Brazil? What about South America? How about Europe? And each one of those I've just named have ETFs representing their markets. And some of them have several ETFs representing their market. For instance, Brazil has EWZ, but most EWZ is in one big stock. I mean, we're talking about a huge portion of it, at least, is one big stock, and that's Petrobrazil. So it doesn't represent the whole market of Brazil. So I have built a list of the various ETFs showing me the health or lack of thereof of the various countries that I'm tracking. And I keep a watch list of all those, and I look at them almost every day. That's how I do it. But yeah, those are good indexes to track. You're listening to Invest Talk. Coming up next, the next half hour, company stock. How much is too much? That's going to be on Invest Talk 101. 888-99-CHARGE, anytime number. You can call right now.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. Let's go to Bill in Maryland. How you doing, Bill? Thanks for listening on the internet.
Well, thank you, Steve. I listen to you all the time.
Thank you. Appreciate Steve, that.
Yes, indeed. You talked about Roth IRA accounts and not being that recommended for older people. And I just want to tell you why I have a Roth and had it for a long time, and I keep adding to it. I'm 82 years old, and I'll tell you the reason. You tell me if I'm wrong.
No, I won't. Unless you really are wrong, I won't say that. But go ahead. Let's hear.
This Roth I have, Steve, I have my daughter as the beneficiary. That to me would be an investment I'm making for her future, not my future.
Okay.
That is why I continue to increase it every year, pay the tax, and feel good about it.
Okay, well, I can see that as an argument for the Roth. And even though you could do that for a regular IRA, Bill, the daughter could inherit an inherited IRA, regular IRA. She could still inherit that as well. But at 82, you can't contribute to a regular IRA, and you can't, and you have to start withdrawing from it. And I can see withdrawing from it because you had those mandatory withdrawals from a regular IRA and put that into a Roth IRA. I can see that for your daughter.
Well, what I do is transfer from my regular IRA each year to the Roth and make that contribution in that way. And
there's nothing wrong with that concept. That's a perfectly valid. And see, when I talk...
And my daughter will be in a high tax bracket, so by getting that tax-free, I think it just makes sense to me. Let me say it that way, Steve.
Okay, and Bill, have you talked? I understand that, and there is an argument for it. But have you talked to an accountant about that when she inherits it, and about your total estate, and is it over $5 million, and if she inherits.
No, it's not that high. I have discussed that with tax planners and.
Okay. Bill, that's a good argument. I'll buy it.
Okay. I listen to you all the time. I thought I'd just give you a call and comment on that. Thank you very much.
I appreciate it. Thank you for the call. So that is a good way to try to get the money to the next generation, everybody, if you don't need the money. And that you do have to have some tax planning. And you do want to talk to an accountant, a CPA, about, you know, I have a lot of money that I'm not going to spend in my lifetime, and how do I get it over to the next generation with the least amount of tax consequence? I think that is a very smart thing to consider, you know, because why do you want to give it to Uncle Sam? I mean, why would you want to do that? Would you want to try to give it to your next generation as much as possible if you don't need it? I think most people would say yes. So I would say yes. Let's go back to Chipotle. Not necessarily Chipotle per se, but look at what happened with Chipotle because of the E. coli. And why did it get hit so hard would be the first question in my mind. Well, first of all, Chipotle's problem is probably, remember, it's E. coli, and it probably started because of the super fast expansion. Okay, as they grow really, really fast, it's hard to keep up with the demands of food production. You need all the things that you need to satisfy all those restaurants. They're going to open 500 new restaurants in a year. Actually, in the past 3 years, I should say that. Well, you got to supply every one of those restaurants with vegetables and meat. So all I'm saying is because of the speed of the growth, you're going to have growing pains. And it's very difficult to keep that quality the same. And I'll say this, Chipotle's done a very good job keeping the quality the same. But where are they getting all their products? They lose control of where they get it because they can't expand as fast. And Chipotle's top management received hefty bonuses based on the speed of their growth. That kind of leads to a problem because they're interested in growing the company as fast as possible to get more money. And, of course, you realize another problem, if you're an investor and you're looking at a company and it's expanding really, really fast and the price of the stock is going up very, very fast and it doesn't, the prices of the stock is much going much faster than the earnings. And if the entire Wall Street thinks it's just a wonderful stock to own, remember I told you last week, you know, the 10 most recommended stocks for 2015 did much worse than the 10 most hated stocks by the Wall Street analysts. They did much better than the 10 most loved stocks versus the hated stock. Wall Street loved in 2015, the beginning of the year, Wall Street loved Chipotle. Couldn't write enough better, great glowing articles about it. When everybody loves something, you should be wary as an investor. And the simple fact is, Chipotle was an expensive stock. The stocks get expensive, you should ratchet up your little red flag meter and say, this is scaring me a little bit. When I say expensive, what's the P/E ratio? What's the price sales ratio? What's the return on equity? What's the debt? There's all these other kind of questions you have to ask yourself and say, yeah, that's an expensive stock based on the earnings they're going to make. Yeah, earnings are growing very fast. Sales are growing very fast. But when a P/E gets into the 50, 60 range, you got to say, that's pretty high. So that should be something I got to be really careful here. Every stock that's like that, everyone, it's easy to pick them out. It's not hard. You know, if you make a little bit of effort, you'll know what stocks I'm talking about. I'm not going to recommend any of them, but you can look at, well, what about Tesla? Is Tesla expensive? They're going to make $1.81. Is it expensive? Yes. Should you invest in it? I won't say no, but I will say this. I won't do it because it's too expensive for me, and I think it will someday get cheap to a place where I would be interested in it. But when is it something you should get into now? I don't mind you investing in one or two of these stocks because they can still keep screaming up. They can. But I want you to at least have your, you know, your little red flag up waving, saying this is dangerous. This is dangerous. Don't put too much money in it. That's what I want. I want you to have some caution in your thinking. Above average investing for the average investor. That's what we're all about here on Invest Talk. We're here to help you avoid the mistakes that can cost you big bucks. In a falling market, better than average means suffering least, suffering much less than the whole market. Going, not going down with it, but going down slower. It's very difficult to go up when the market goes down. That's, you know, because who knows when that happens. It's very difficult. In a rising market, it means being at the being making money, but maybe not making all the money, but at least making it sustainable and keeping it. That's what they want. You want to keep that, don't you? Information, knowledge, perspective, those are all keys if you're going to be successful. So ask your questions. Bring your comments to me. 888-99-CHART. I really want to thank the caller about Bill from Maryland about that Roth and why he liked it. I like that. Let's have a discussion about it. 888-99-CHART.
Do you have questions about real estate? Is it time to downsize? Where do I begin? Should I sell my house or keep it as a source of income? These can be complex questions, but questions that need accurate answers. That's why KPP Financial has a licensed real estate agent on staff. Have a question about real estate? Send it directly to Justin. Click on Contact Justin on investtalk.com.
Let's go to Josh in San Francisco first. How are you doing, Josh?
I'm doing great. You know, the question I had was about variable annuities. My mother purchased one in her IRA.
Oh, that's terrible.
To take things back, she had a bad experience during the pullback in the stock market, never wanting to invest in the market again before. And because the annuity offered a guarantee, she was able to get back in the market. It was about 4 years ago. And the account's been doing great. And I know the costs are a little bit higher. My question is, what do you think about variable annuities? And without the guarantee, she would have probably stayed in savings or a fixed account.
Josh, that's what they do. They sell them to the older people because they need that safety net. But they also are very attracted to the growth prospects. And, you know, I don't want to badmouth annuities completely. There are places for them. First of all, to put an annuity, which is a tax-deferred instrument, inside a tax-deferred instrument of an IRA makes no sense to me at all. Because you're tax-deferred for the 7 or 10 years that the annuity lasts. You know, you have to keep it forever a length of time.
Yeah.
Most of them are tax-deferred already. So why put, you know, you're not getting any tax benefit because you already have the tax benefit, number one. Number two, the structure is such that it's complex. These things are devised by insurance companies and very, very complex issues. The average person can't understand how to calculate their returns because they're so complex. The fees are very high. You know what? They're really good when the market is collapsing because you have that floor. That's very good. But the reason why they make you hold on to them for 10 years, because any 10-year period in the stock market has always been up. So the people issuing these annuities know that they're going to make the money off of you.
She's in a balanced account, and it's been averaging about 10% a year. So, I mean, she's a lot happier than if she would have stayed in a CD.
Well, that, you know, it's, if it's working for her and she likes it, I'm glad she's happy. How old is she?
62 years old.
Okay. She should not renew it because she's going to start needing that money. And some of them allow you to take out 10% a year, but she should not renew it in her IRA.
She only had a 3-year commitment with it.
That's very short. That's unusual. I've always seen them 7 to 10 years. The biggest problem is the getting out of annuity because a lot of people need the money before the time, and they sell them to old people.
Oh, I see.
And a lot of times they need the money sometime during that 7 to 10 year period, and they can't get it without a nice stiff penalty. And then usually when they pull it out, not only do they have a stiff penalty, but they have to pay taxes on it at ordinary income tax level. And the argument there was, well, they're older, so they don't have a lot of taxes. So therefore, they're going to be taxed at a low rate. Well, that's not as low as 15% capital gains tax. There's a lot of reasons not to like them, Josh. Be very careful, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for the call. Let's go to Ralph in Poway. How you doing, Ralph?
Hi, Steve. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I have a very simple question. I've made my little pile of money. I'm 63 years old and about to retire. And
okay.
What I want to do is I want to make sure that pile of money doesn't disappear in 30 years. Okay. I want it to last me 30 years.
Okay.
Now, I need a plan to accomplish that, and I need your help.
Okay.
I'll listen to your answer.
You know, when you have a lump of money, and this is the money you need to protect, and you want it to produce income for you and for forever, basically, until you die, and that's what Ralph is talking about. I got this money, this pile of money. I need it to produce income. How can I do that? Well, the more income it produces means the more risk you're taking, meaning it can go down, too. There's some calculators out there called retirement calculators, and you can plug in how much interest you're making on that pile of money and how much it produces for you without ever running out. We have an income program at our KPP Financial Income. Now, I tell people, expect 5 to 8% return, and you probably will never run out of money. Why do I say probably? Because there's no guarantee. The higher the yield, the more chances you take. But you can plug in 5, 6% into the retirement calculator and figure that's about a pretty fairly conservative number. And if you invest it properly and not take too much risk, buy some bonds, hold them to maturity, buy some high dividend paying stock, you can produce that kind of money fairly consistently. Okay, and never run out of the principal. The principal will never run out. So that's what you do, Ralph. You go to those retirement calculators, plug in some numbers, and they'll tell you how much money you have, $250,000. What interest rate do you want to plug in? Well, plug in 5%. And then you need to manage the money to give you that 5%. You can't do that with CDs or money market. That's not going to work. So anyways, and if you want to talk about it further, just give me a call at the office. I'll tell you all about how we do it. You know, I don't mind sharing that information. Mark in Berkeley. How you doing, Mark?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Quick question. What would you recommend investors' emerging market portion of the total equity? And then getting back to valuations, what's the historic relative valuation between the U.S. and emerging markets? You just mentioned some P.E. levels. I'm just curious how that relates to historic average.
Historically, the emerging market P.E.s are much less than ours because they deserve it. Because in history, they're very suspect in their numbers. Okay, so everybody wants better numbers, you know, in our markets. They're scary. That's changing a little bit in recent history. And Peter, I think about 20 to 30% should have foreign exposure in your portfolio. 20 to 30% of your overall portfolio. But Mark, that does not mean you should have that much in foreign stocks. For instance, if you bought Yum Brand and about a third of Yum Brand's profits are coming from outside the United States, well, there's a foreign exposure.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of exposure needs to be added into your overall exposure.
Do you guys break it down that specifically, like per company exposure, or do you have a rough target of your individual positions that are traded outside the
We actually do break it down by our individual company's exposure, and we of course we own ADRs, which are American Depository shares, in other words foreign stocks that trade on our American exchanges, because they have to report using general accounting principles like ours, so it's harder for them to cheat. They still can cheat.
Yeah.
And trust me, Mark, they do cheat.
But, great, thanks.
But, you know, you need to have some exposure because that's where the growth is. Growth. Appreciate the call, Mark. Thank you very much. Okay. As we move into the final segment of the day, we welcome your questions about any money matter. 888-99-CHART is how you get through right now. When you sign up to be an InvestTalk Insider, you have access to a long list of recorded webinars like Profiting in a Rising Interest Rate Environment. The information in the information in the webinar, it could have a pretty big impact on your retirement portfolio. Just sign up. Go to InvestTalk Insider on InvestTalk.com.
You're listening to an encore presentation of InvestTalk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next InvestTalk.
888-99-CHART, that's our number, 888-992-4278. Let's go to Sean in San Diego. How are you doing, Sean?
Hi, guys. Great show.
Thank you.
Hey, listen, I had a question. Currently, I'm an MBA student, and I'm thinking about writing my thesis over companies that utilize value-based management, more specifically, economic value-added management techniques.
Okay.
In terms of investing, should one look at specifically at companies that use the model in their management?
Well, when you look at a company, you look at all the ratios, okay? And that's going to give you the basis of whether the company is making money and how much money is it making on its assets.
Okay.
Return on assets, return on equity. The ratios between sales growth, earnings growth, and the price of the stock, all those things, if you're looking at the stock price in relationship to the company itself, that's probably different than what you're going to do your thesis on.
Okay.
But you're doing your thesis on is the fundamental management of the company and how good it is.
Yes, and it'd be more of the long-term benefit. I really don't see a short-term benefit as far as the stock price because it already takes in consideration the right. cash flows.
Yes, right. The stock price will reflect all those ratios that you'll be looking at. You want to look at the efficiency of the company, its efficient use of its assets or its cash or its equity.
Okay, great.
Okay, so you want to look at return on assets and return on equity. Those are the two things you want to look for as far as good management of that company.
Okay, so that would be the term, the accounting profit, not specifically the economic profit of
That's
the company.
Right.
Great.
Sean, appreciate the call.
Thank
Good
you,
luck with
sir.
That.
I do appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Congratulations on the MBA. Hope it works out for you and you make tons of money in the future.
Thank you. I'm very excited. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, let's get to one more question before the end of the day as well, because we'd like to answer questions first. 888-99-CHART. Mark called from Los Angeles.
Yes, hi. I'm listening to your show here this evening with my son, who's 14 years old, and I'm trying to inspire him to learn how to invest in the stock market as well. We're both beginners, for that matter. I have not done a lot of investing myself. I would appreciate whatever beginning advice, perhaps, you care to pass along. Again, I appreciate listening to your show. Hope to hear from you soon. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Well, once a young person, I always, whenever I talk to a young person, I have lots of nieces and nephews in that age group, I always try to talk to them about what makes money. That you want to buy companies or own companies that make money. And that's the basic fundamental rule to me in investing. Sure, you can buy stocks that don't make money that go up. And sure, you can buy stocks that do make money and they go down. But eventually, if the company continues to make money, the stock over time will go up. And one of the problems you have with young people, and the problem they teach in school, by the way, is impatience. You think, I want it to go up today. I want it to be up tomorrow. And how they reference this in high school, I've done this several years in a row where nieces and nephews take a class and the teacher says, well, pick 10 stocks and we'll see how they do in 6 weeks or 8 weeks. It's like a contest. In 6 or 8 weeks, come on, that's unrealistic. You then pick stocks that are just a momentum stocks. And my nephews and the two that called me about this, I said, okay, we're either going to be at the top or we're going to be at the bottom of your class. Most likely we won't be in the middle. And I would just pick momentum stocks for them and say, these are the stocks that are going up just because they're going up, not based on the fundamentals. So in a 14-year-old, in that age group, you know, what do you like? I go to that. What do they like? Do they like video games? Well, who makes the video games? How much money do they make making those video games? Do you like movies? Maybe. Do you like Star Wars? How much money do you think Disney is going to make? Star Wars made $1 billion over the first weekend since it's been out. $1 billion for one movie. Things like that will get them interested. But you also got to teach them patience, okay? Patience, because stocks move slowly. And see, you just got to be careful. So find something they're interested in, a company, two companies, find out what they're buying, what they like. Maybe they like Nike shoes. I have a nephew who got 8 pairs of shoes for Christmas and loved them. Maybe look at Nike. I will get to the treasury yield tomorrow, I promise, because I think it's a very interesting point. We'll make sure we'll do that. Our hour's up, everybody. If you have a question or comment that you want to share, you can get a note to me directly by going to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve. I'm registered investment advisor Steve Peasley, and for Justin Klein and everybody at KPP Financial, I thank you very much for listening. And again, thank you for listening all year long. Have a great tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.